Welcome to the Seven Shifts audio series interview edition, where we sit down with the best minds in the restaurant industry to inspire you with new ways to improve your business. I'm DJ, Seven Shift content writer, and today we're joined by Eric Cacciatore, host of Restaurant Unstoppable, the number one restaurant industry podcast. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Dude, it's a pleasure to be here, and I have to point out the sirens in the background, because literally before we got started, like there might be some sirens in the background.
Yeah.
Record. This is the world of podcasting, man.
It is.
Do it.
Yeah, man. It's here we go. Let's wait for that to go by. We'll wait for that. All right.
Some
New York podcast, City, baby.
Some podcast pro tips. Just roll the punches, bro. Because sometimes the world is just too much of a bastard. You just gotta
absolutely cool. But yeah, I mean, jokes aside, you know, tell us a little bit more about the podcast and you know, just about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So Restaurant Unstoppable podcast started in 2012 as a result of me trying to find this podcast and it not existing. And that's when I discovered podcasting way back in like 2012, 2011, to special thanks to a professor of mine who assigned it to us as a homework assignment. He said, go find three podcasts on three topics that interest you and come back and report about what you learned. And the three topics at that time for me were entrepreneurism, marketing, and hospitality. So as you can imagine, there were tons of entrepreneurial podcasts, tons of marketing podcasts, but there wasn't a single solid restaurant hospitality industry podcast. Yeah. So I just continued to like for a year, like check back to see if this thing was created yet. And it just wasn't created. And then I heard a few pieces of advice on the podcast that I was listening to, because I was listening to, like I said, a lot of marketing and entrepreneurial podcasts, a lot of motivational, personal growth type stuff. And some of the quotes I heard during my you know, education during this journey I was going on. And I should mention, I resigned as a commercial pilot. I was going back to school for marketing and hospitality. And I was working as the assistant winemaker at Jewelltown Vineyards, which is a small local winery up in New Hampshire, as the assistant winemaker. So I was locked in the basement. I thought I'll get into wine sales. So I was locked in the basement for hours on end, just listening to content. And two pieces of advice really stood out to me. The first one is, if you make your life about helping enough other people get what they want, you will get anything you want in life. I can't remember who said that. I'm just sure I'm destroying it. I'm paraphrasing here. And the second quote was, if you're looking for something and you can't find it, odds are you're not alone. So that was all I needed to hear to kind of have the motivation to start my own podcast. And what I wanted, you know, the vision for Restaurant Unstoppable was basically I want to take all the best parts of the podcast I was listening to at that time, which were basically just people sharing the stories of successful individuals and how they did it. And I wanted to create that for the restaurant industry. So, you know, dialing back a little bit further, I grew up in the restaurant industry. My parents owned a restaurant. We had lines going out the door every weekend. We were being featured on public television for like this place you have to go to up in New Hampshire, all throughout the Northeast. People would travel hours to come to our restaurant.
Oh, wow.
And I have vivid memories of my parents crying at the kitchen table, trying to figure out how they're going to pay the mortgage. So, you know, this podcast exists for those small mom and pops who are passionate about food, who are passionate about service, who are passionate about hospitality, but just don't know how to run a business. So really what I'm trying to do is, you know, is I'm trying to paint the picture of perfection for the restaurant industry, what it takes to be successful in the industry. And I'm traveling across the nation, going face to face with some of the most badass restaurateurs out there. And I'm just saying, how did you do it? How did you get from not knowing a damn thing to being at the top of your game? Like, take us on this journey with you. And that's what Restaurant Unstoppable is all about.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, 778 episodes, I think, almost, you know, up at that 800 mark and counting.
Yeah.
You know, you've probably, you know, chatted with more chefs, restaurateurs, you know, restaurant tech CEOs than anyone. You know, and through all of that, through all those conversations, you know, what have you seen kind of be the biggest challenge restaurants are facing, you know, let's say the last year or last 2 years?
Oh. Well, that's an obvious answer. COVID-19, just surviving. And honestly, it's weird because I really don't focus on COVID-19 that much anymore, because I feel like if you haven't pivoted, if you haven't evolved, then you're probably not in business anymore. So really a lot of the conversation right now is, okay, let's not talk about what you should have done a year ago.
Right.
Let's talk about what you're doing now to recover and to be the best version of yourself going into the future is a lot of what the conversation is about. When we get to current time, we kind of leapfrog over what did you do, and we're talking more about what are you doing now, 100%. And how have you pivoted, how have you evolved?
Yeah, you know, and I guess, you know, with COVID in the background, and you know, the restaurants that kind of made it through, I think now we're looking towards the future. You know, and what do you see as the biggest opportunity right now in the restaurant industry and for restaurants to take advantage of?
It's so hard to answer that question because there's just so much happening. And I mean, obviously right now there's this opportunity with ghost kitchens and increasing your digital footprint. Yep. And I think a lot of people are focusing on that. Honestly, when I first started hearing about ghost kitchens a year or two ago, my original thought was, you know, we made so much progress over the past 5-10 years of being more of a transformative industry and focusing more on the why and having purpose and slowing down and putting more of your personal brand, more of your personal character into your brand. And I was really impressed with the progress that we were making, educating the public about where your food comes from, just injecting consciousness into business, really. And when I hear the words ghost kitchen back in 2018, I'm like, all that progress we made to put soul into a brand, we're just like literally having like this soulless ghost kitchen situation where you're just slapping a brand. And you just, you know, it's all about SEO and trying to be discoverable. And I get it. But at the same time, I was worried because I was like, are we going to be super soulless again? Like, what are we doing? Why are we just like, we're being these reactive monkeys all over again and just trying to like chase the dollar, you know? I have had some people shed some perspective on me since that original thought. And I do think there's value here. And I think that you need to look at ghost kitchens as in addition to what you're doing. And the most successful brands are going to continue to be themselves, but they're also going to use their assets, their kitchens, to diversify and to take menu items that are already existing and then creating entire brands. I mean, it's just getting creative and it's kind of getting a little sly. And I don't think that's going to replace restaurants because at the end of the day, people, you know, it's weird right now because of COVID-19. I think we're starting to come out of it, but we're social creatures. I mean, we have hundreds of thousands of years of evolution to need each other, to be next to each other, to look at each other, to touch each other. And you can't just unevolve overnight. And I think that people, when we're given the green light, I think people are going to want to go back out. I just think that it's just going to be a more complex, a more diverse industry. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think you're just going to see ghost kitchens as like, it's just going to be another segment. But another fear I had is that we're going to flood the market, right? Because before COVID-19, the industry was already kind of starting to cannibalize itself.
Yeah.
And there were more restaurants than people could go out to eat at. And now we're just, you know, we're bringing even more options to the table for people to eat at home.
Yeah.
Just had a conversation with Ryan Grumpin the other day. We literally just recorded a workshop around ghost kitchens. And he pointed out that he thinks that this is just going to make the industry more competitive and that, you know, the cream of the crop will rise, you know, it's just going to make us all better. But I think one thing that is super like hopeful is that, I mean, if this were to have happened 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you would have seen a few people that would have been first to market and they would have owned, you know, they would have owned that market, that industry, that vertical. But now with information being so accessible, I think that it's leveled the playing field. Now anybody with a restaurant EIN number business can get, you know, the information and figure out how to start a ghost kitchen and get to work right away and literally launch a concept in a week. So you have all these players, you know, it's no longer pay to play. It's no longer the privilege that have, you know, access to this information that get to be first to market and carve out and own an entire vertical. I think we're all rushing at the same time. So I think that in the sense that it is leveling the playing field. And I that to me is hopeful. I just hope that people choose to inject their soul into these ghost kitchens and don't just make them transactional. You know, it just scares me how we can hide stuff with ghost kitchens. Like I don't know. It's just weird. Like I like the idea of transparency, and I'm not talking about like literally being able to see through a ghost transparency though, but
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of baked into the name, right? And I think cloud kitchens, virtual restaurants sounds a little bit better. But, you know, I agree with you. I think that, you know, the restaurants that do are able to inject soul into those things and not use them as a way to kind of cloak what they're actually doing. You know, has there been any restaurants that, you know, have inspired you or, you know, done things that are interesting ways of injecting that kind of soul into the digital operations?
There's not one that comes to mind, honestly, right now. And I'll be frank, I haven't really explored the world of ghost kitchens. I'm trying to plan some trips right now to Los Angeles.
Cool.
There's a few people, a few players, their names are escaping my mind right now, but I've been active on Clubhouse and kind of joining some of these conversations and there's some cool stuff happening out West. I think what's really cool with ghost kitchens is this idea of franchising ghost kitchens. Mm-hmm. And if you say to yourself, how do you franchise a ghost kitchen? When you look at what a franchise is, it's basically just a specific way to do a specific thing. Yeah. And then if you find a specific way to do a specific thing with a specific brand, you can package that. And then if it's successful, you can give restaurants, anybody with a kitchen across the nation, the recipe and the brand, and they can basically you can start selling franchising your recipe. That's really all it is, because the idea behind a ghost kitchen is really just to do one thing really well. So that I think is really exciting. This idea that you can have a unique way to do a specific thing, and if it has legs, you can take it worldwide like in like a month, because you just give people permission to sell it. So if you strike gold, you know, like I think what's, and I'm going to again destroy this quote, but it was a quote that Ryan shared with us the other day. When you strike gold, or when you hit oil, right? When you drill for oil and you hit oil, you don't pull up and go 10 feet over and drill down again. Like you go deep, you know, you take that thing as far as you can and you let that thing pull. So I think that's kind of what we're going to see happening within ghost kitchens, is once people realize this formula of, oh, if I strike gold, you know, it's never been easier to scale something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, thinking about that, I think, you know, one thing that restaurants and ghost kitchens are going to need to figure out is that quality control, because they don't kind of have that instrument there to, you know, that the bigger chains and the bigger franchises have to, you know, make sure everything is the same, no matter where it is. They don't have the kind of the boots on the ground, if you know, to say, you know, and make sure. And I think that's maybe the biggest challenge facing that right now.
Yeah. And I mean, we're talking a lot about ghost kitchens right now, but I also wanted to bring to the conversation, I think there's going to be an incredible opportunity with brick and mortars too across the nation, because you're seeing right now more and more people. I think people will end up going back to the cities, but I also think because of COVID-19, it's literally changing the landscape of how we do business. Yeah. And I think that it's okay to go back out again, people are still going to stay in their new homes. That people moved out of the cities. Everyone escaped the cities, and they went to smaller, medium-sized cities across the nation. And those cities across the nations, like these, I don't know. Like I'm trying to think. Like name some medium-sized cities out there.
Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. Boise, Idaho.
Des Moines.
Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Manchester, New Hampshire, Lewiston, Maine. Like these cities that in like the beginning of like the 20th century were at their, you know, peak, but then with the 21st century, by that time everyone had left to go to the Bostons, the New York Cities, the San Franciscos, the Los Angeleses, the Dallases, because that's where the opportunity was.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we don't need to be physically present in these cities anymore to have opportunity, because we've proven that we can work remotely and spread out.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see people spreading out. And I think that these markets are going to boom. These medium to small size cities are going to boom. And I think people are going to be much happier. We're starting to learn so much about the human psyche and what we need to be happy. And I love anthropology. I think the future is all about the past. We're figuring out so much about what we need to be happy. And a lot of that is just better relationships. So when you spread out and you have fewer people to bump up against, you go deeper into those relationships. And I think that, that's just been missing, especially in big cities. There's just so many people. We can only handle about 150 relationships, but we're stacked on top of each other. So I think by spreading out, we're going to be much happier. We're going to be able to spread the money that we're making much further. So that means people will have more excess income to spend on food and going out. And they're going to be like, this is way better than being on top of each other in New York City, Manhattan. Like I can live in Manchester, New Hampshire, spread my daughter or, stretch my dollar twice as far and have a better quality of life. So, and be happier. So I think that's a big part of it too. That's really exciting.
Yeah, 100%. And these people moving out from the big cities are kind of, they're taking their money and they're taking their tastes with them as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And information and knowledge is spreading across the industry faster than ever before. So high quality restaurants are everywhere now. And I kind of joke, like, I think like the James Beard Awards are bullshit now because there's so much talent everywhere. Like, how can you say like, this is the best one in the Northeast? Like there's so much talent everywhere. And the bar is being risen across the boards.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And one more point, in the big cities, and I know you want to make this a short episode, but in the big cities, you're going to see that all these big corporate offices are being, they're empty.
Yeah.
And you're going to see all these. So I think cities are going to be a lot more younger people, and you're going to see a lot more affordable housing go into place. And in where all these empty corporate offices are, there's cafeterias.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see restaurants moving into these cafeterias and serving and using the space for repurposing it for affordable living. And then it's going to be like a micro community in that building where you can go meet other people who live there and be social.
Yeah.
So I think there's like literally like going to be a boom of opportunity. It's just about perspective and making the most of a crappy situation.
Absolutely.
So
yeah,
is that all of our time?
No, we have a few more. We got a few more minutes. Yeah, I mean, if you know, I know one of your goals is to open a restaurant. You had to choose one city right now to open a restaurant, where would you go?
Oh man, that's a tough question. There's a lot of variables that come into play. And if I were to open a restaurant tomorrow, it wouldn't be the traditional approach.
Yeah.
I would probably partner with people who have had a huge influence on me, or who I've just think are like the bee's knees, right? And I would invest in their vision and their skills. So my vision for opening a restaurant is literally like finding a badass chef. And I'm sorry, this is a very professional podcast. I'm sorry for
no, you're good
words. Finding a chef and an operator who has just impressed me in saying, hey, like I have this incredible asset. I have this podcast where, thousands and thousands and thousands of people are listening who are passionate about the industry. And I want to do like kind of like open book management where I say, okay, so I'm going to open a restaurant and here's exactly how we're going to do it. And here are the tools and services that we're using in the restaurant. And here's the impact that this is making on the restaurant. And here are the leadership techniques we're using, and here are our core values, and here's our vision. And I want to use the restaurants that I'm partnering with to teach the rest of the world how we're doing it. That's my vision. And I'm scared crap saying this out loud because now I have to do it. But it's part of, you got to put it out into the universe. Like, and hopefully I don't know who these people are yet,
right?
But hopefully by putting it out there, some people start approaching me and my options start to get better. But I mean, there's no way I can do the podcast and open a restaurant at the same time. So there's probably going to be some type of collaboration of sorts. I don't know if I'm answering your question right now.
No, you totally are. It's interesting after you've spoken to so many people in the industry, to get your picture of how you would go about it. Kind of learning from the mistakes of hundreds of other people. And I think that's super valuable. My last question would just be, restaurants right now, they made it through the pandemic. They figured it out. They adapted. They did everything they can do. But looking towards the future, what restaurants look like in 5 years, what's one thing restaurants can do right now to make sure that they're ready for anything coming up?
One thing they can do right now to make sure that they're ready for what's coming up. You can't do it alone.
Yeah.
And I think that the days of a single person being the shot caller, the days of command and control and dictatorship within the restaurant industry, to be competitive, because like I said, like the bar is being raised across the industry.
Yeah.
People, the options for people to get food are diversifying. And if you're going to be the best, you need to be a great leader. You need to learn how to surround yourself with people who are strong where you're weak. And you really have to increase your social and emotional intelligence to be able to work in teams of people. So I'd say right now, just start taking servant leadership approach to your business, and looking at your business as a way to create opportunities for others, and leaning on the strengths and the talents of the people that you would be paying, like that you would just in the past have hired and been like, hey, your job is to put the tortilla on the heater and then pass it to that person to put the meat on the tortilla. All those people have special strengths. And I think that it's going to be the operators that tap into this potential and create opportunity for these people to, you can start doing that today because it's going to be a very competitive landscape. And if you can tap into the talent of everybody on your team and create those opportunities, I think you'll go much further together. So I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for.
That's perfect. I mean, and that's, I think, something that anyone can take to their restaurant, you know, right now, this hour, this minute, and just, you know, make sure that they're investing in the people that they have. And, you know, like you said, I think it's going to become a much more competitive industry, you know, and it's going to be seen as more of a skilled labor kind of industry than it ever was before.
Yeah. You have to do more than ever before to be competitive, and you won't be able to do it by yourself. And you'll have much more fun doing it with other people. I mean, you could eat an entire pie to yourself, but I mean, the fun part about making a pie isn't eating it. It's sharing it, you know? Absolutely. So, just having that mentality, of sharing, and knowing that you can go further together, is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't think of a better note to end it on. Yeah. I mean, thanks for joining us today. You know, is there anything that you're working on that you'd like to share?
Yeah. So, with COVID-19, things got tough for Restaurant Unstoppable. Basically all my sponsors were like, hey, we're not making money anymore because all these restaurants shut down. So we can't sponsor you. So I had to figure out, I basically had all my eggs into one basket, and I just, you know, and I had known in the back of my mind that I was going to have to diversify eventually. Yeah. So COVID-19 was kind of the kick in the fanny I needed to, diversify my platform and to really take Restaurant Unstoppable to the next level. And that manifested in the form of Restaurant Unstoppable Network, which is essentially my approach to slowing down and to going deeper. So over the past, you know, 10 years, or over the previous 7 years, I was just trying to make an example as many people as possible. And I'm still doing that, but I'm slowing down a little bit, putting out less content, but I'm going deeper. The show's longer now. Yeah. I'm really just diving in, and I'm not in a rush, and I'm really looking to make relationships. And then I'm inviting these people to Restaurant Unstoppable Network. So as I'm connecting with these restaurateurs, I'm saying, hey, come join my network. And now I'm literally connecting my most loyal listeners, in the network with my restaurateurs and the tools and services that they're recommending. And Restaurant Unstoppable is just taking a much more journalistic approach of showing your work. So, okay, you're recommending all these things. Let's go to those things you're recommending, learn more about them. And I'm just kind of like organizing the content much better and making it much more digestible. So if you're a listener of the show and you want to connect with the people I'm featuring on the show and to learn about the tools and services that are being recommended, we're just going deep and I'm taking you with me. And that's my new project. Head over to restaurantunstoppablenetwork.com if you want to come hang out. And thank you if you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're not listening to Restaurant Unstoppable, you absolutely should. Yes. It's on Spotify, everywhere kind of podcasts are sold these days. You know, is there anywhere else people can find you?
Find me on Instagram. You can hit me up at Eric Cacciatore, and that's ericcacciatore. You can hashtag Restaurant Unstoppable if you want, or shoot me an email, eric@restaurantunstoppable.com.
Thanks for tuning into the Seven Shifts audio series, Interview Edition. You can find more great insights about the industry at our blog or join our community on Facebook, The Tip Jar. Find these links and more in the show notes. Until next time.